So going forward then, more CARES funding, of course, would have to come from the federal level if there's another bill that's passed there. The money that from the first CARES fund has been distributed at least to local levels, and they're still working on getting out to the communities. Now, obviously, a state legislature doesn't really have any say in what happens at the federal level. You can advocate, you can talk to your representatives, of course, but beyond CARES funding, because that's not a thing we can control here locally, what can we do to help the state of Alaska going forward? You're talking about not limiting small businesses, tourism, for instance. Anything in the tourism realm got hit pretty hard. Are there things we can be doing in that realm?
Tourism definitely got hit hard, that was probably one of the, you know, you take in last year's large fire that we had and how that affected tourism. And then the next year we've got COVID and that affected our tourism. We were fortunate because the Kenai Peninsula opened back up quicker than most parts of the state. And we started seeing more people in state coming to visit Kenai, and that helped some, but it was still difficult. What I think the state can do, advocating for relief when it comes to, I'll go back to CARES funding here. One of the things that we're trying to do, and we're trying to advocate at the federal level, is we need to be able to use some of the CARES money to also offset some of the revenue loss that we've got at the local level. And right now that's not allowed.
Right.
And we're trying to influence that, and we're hoping maybe after the election that will get influenced one way or another from our congressional staff. But that's one of the things that as a legislature and coming from the governor's office, we have to work on too, because that's important. Everybody's at government level has seen their revenue decreased, and if we could use that for revenue, that means that in the future it would save from having to raise taxes because of that.
And tourism in general, what do you think the state's role should be in promoting tourism for Alaska? Or is that more of a responsibility at the local level?
It's both. I think it can be done both. The local level probably does it the best. Private even does it better. I think they know the needs probably as well as anybody, but it needs to be a partnership between all three to make it successful. We want to, of course, when we open back up and people start traveling, we want to get as many of those tourist dollars down here. You know, those tourists coming down here are staying in our small businesses. They're paying our sales tax, and that helps us on every level. It helps us fund our education. It helps us fund the road issues and everything else we have. So it all fits in together. It's an important piece of the puzzle.
Okay. Another big issue, of course, in the state of Alaska is Pebble Mine. Where do you fall on that one?
Yeah, Pebble Mine has definitely been a hot topic recently. And what I have put out about Pebble Mine is I'm typically a pro-industry person. I want to see more industry, not less. I want to see the government give any industry that wants to come in a fair share and make sure it goes through the process, the engineering process and the EIS, and everything is looked at properly. Pebble Mine is in such a place that for us here in the peninsula, we want to make sure that our watersheds and the Cook Inlet isn't disturbed, because our fishing industry is so important. So for Pebble Mine, you know, it's one of those that I want to see them have a fair process, but I'm concerned because I want to make sure that it doesn't have an effect on our wildlife and our waterway. So that one I say I'm kind of right in the middle on right now.
Okay. Do you have concerns about the environmental review process as it stands now? I mean, that's something, depending on which side of that issue you're on, it's either adequate or not.
Again, it's one of those things we have to depend on, that the federal government's doing right. I've been involved with looking at the EIS when it comes to the for the gas line that's being proposed. So I get to see the process. I get to be part of making comments on it from a local level, dealing with our local government. And when you see all the checks and balances take place, I mean, it's something that doesn't happen overnight. Everybody gets to weigh in on it, no matter what side you're on. So right now I have to say that we have to depend on it. If we did the same thing today, 40 years ago, when we were developing oil and gas in this state, we wouldn't have anything. This would be just a natural park, and we can't be that way. We have to be able to get to our resources and use them for Alaskans in a safe manner. I grew up in a state that was heavily a coal mine state. I have seen what can be done wrong if it's done wrong and not properly monitored. And I don't see that happening as much here. We have accidents and incidents and things take place, but I look at what we've done here in the Cook Inlet for these years, and we've done a pretty decent job. Can we always do better? Absolutely.
Well, and speaking of Cook Inlet, I mean, we had the first oil strike, right, in the state, in the Swanson, and a lot of our infrastructure, especially in the inlet, is aging, and there's not a ton of money in just going and replacing old pipe, especially under the water. It's a pretty dicey proposition. So, you know, there's certainly concern about older infrastructure, and especially when you have smaller producers that come up and buy out other producers that are leaving infrastructure. What involvement do you think the state should have in maintaining, you know, infrastructure safety and protecting against spills and all that good stuff?
Still have to be the regulatory agency and make sure that everybody's doing the safe processes that doesn't allow for any environmental issues. I think we've done a pretty decent job of that. Again, just from what I've seen here in my time here on the peninsula, and specifically working out north here with the oil and gas industry, I think they go above and beyond trying to make sure that things are done right, because they live here with us, most of them. They're part of the peninsula, and they're not going to want to do anything that jeopardizes what we've got going on here. Again, this is the most important thing that we have to the state. Everything that the state, when you look at the majority of why we've been successful and why we have the infrastructure, it's because of the oil industry and what it's brought to us over these years.
You've mentioned fishing as one of your interests. If you are elected, what do you think from the legislature level can be done to better support fisheries, better manage fisheries?
I think one of the important things from a legislature standpoint is that, you know, you've got to make appointments to the fish board, and you've got to make sure that balance continues. You don't want one side to be more heavy than the other, and typically you're dealing with commercial fishing and sport fishing, and you want to make sure that balance is there so both voices are heard, because we need to be successful. I'm not a fish expert. What I know is that in my 30 years here, you know, we used to have large, plentiful kings, and we don't, and we want to get back to that. So we got to get the politics out of it, and, you know, get the people in there that probably have the science in mind that can get the population back where it was, and that would make both healthier. And but I think, again, my position as a legislator will make sure that we keep a balance on the fish board and keep both groups evenly matched.
So there happens to be a crop of nominees that are awaiting appointment from the legislature. Would you be in favor of them then? I mean, there's a couple concerns. One of the gentlemen has worked for Pebble Mine. And then the other issue that you hear quite a bit is regional representation. So currently the Fish Board has, I believe it's only one member who actually lives in a coastal community. The rest of the folks, especially the governor's latest nominees, are from Anchorage, Valley area, and Fairbanks. Do you think that there's enough representation, diversity, those voices being represented on the Fish Board? Would you approve this current crop of folks, or would you be looking for some different balance on the board?
Probably a different balance, but I would also, that's where I would bring in our local groups and get their input also. I would want to hear what their input is. It's an important issue. It's got to be done right. I mean, just something as simple as us not being able to hold meetings on the Kenai Peninsula is just, it's just so outlandish that, we can't get that type of input from the state. And that's one of the influences we got to have. We got to change that. The Kenai Peninsula is just such an important marketplace when it comes to fishing, commercial and sport, and we've got to do a better job. We've got to have more influence.
Are there other specific issues or committees that you would like to serve on in the legislature?
You know, as a freshman, if I got elected, of course, I would love to be on the finance committee. That typically doesn't happen, but again, I've got some great budgeting background from either when I was the fire chief, responsible budgets that I presented, to where we are, where I'm at today with the mayor as his chief of staff. I'm highly interested in veterans issues. If I could help there, and also public safety, I think that's where my expertise is going to be. We're dealing with 911 situations right now here in our local area, dealing with our dispatch center, and you know the state wants to look at having their own dispatch center, one in the valley and one in Fairbanks, and eliminate the state employees that we have down here, and in also the contractors in the valley and in Ketchikan. And we're working to try to make that balance better, because 911 is an important aspect to emergency response, and that's the kind of conversations that I could go in immediately and have influence on.
Veterans issues, then. What do you see needing to be done there?
Well, we always want to be able to help our veterans whenever it comes to their medical is one of the big issues. We want to make sure that if we can, we have the facilities for them to get help if they need it. We want to make sure that, you know, instead of traveling to Anchorage, maybe they can get what they need here. You don't know how difficult it is for some of these guys until you've served with them, the men and women that I served with, for the last 20 years they've been in conflict. And as you get older, now that I'm in my 50s, you understand the sacrifices they made. You don't understand it when you're a young man or woman who goes into the service. You know, you're typically not doing it because of anything else, but you're just looking for a job and a way out. But then as you get older, you see these men and women, they don't get to decide where they go or what they do. Their country does that for them, and they get put in these conflicts. And I think it's up to us to make sure we take care of them when they come back. And I want to make sure that we can continue that and give them the best opportunities to get well.
Okay. As far as your place in the legislature, so you registered yourself as non-affiliated, I believe, correct? And yeah. No secret, you identify as a Republican, though.
I am a registered Republican, so mm-hmm. I run as a petition candidate. So as a petition candidate, so I don't have any major party that I'm affiliated with mm-hmm. right now. I was not selected by the Republicans, but I am a Republican. I'm the only candidate on the ballot that won't have any affiliation when it comes to being a Republican. And I didn't want to hide that. I want to make sure everybody realizes that me running as a petition candidate wasn't trying to hide my party. I'm proud of the party that I've been a part of, and I've been a registered Republican my entire life. Can't hide that. I run as a petition candidate. I wanted to give District 30 more options when it comes to voting. At the time, there was three people running in the primary, in the Republican primary, two running against the incumbent. When I look at the numbers, typically what happens if you get three or four running against the incumbent, it gives the incumbent a bigger advantage. And I wasn't interested in doing that. And of course, things changed tragically whenever Representative Knopf passed away. And I just want to be in a position now to where I think I can work across party lines and people in District 30, whether you're non-registered in any party or a party, I can have conversations with you. I think I can listen to people. I think that right now what I'm hoping is that the people of District 30 think that they have a choice, and they look up what my record is and what I stand for, and hopefully that they'll support me.
And if you are elected, would you be looking to participate in the caucus? Would you be looking to do bipartisan work? How would you see yourself fitting into the larger structure in the House?
Well, I did mention that I'm a Republican, so I would caucus with like-minded Republicans and conservatives. That's not going to be a secret. Binding caucus is an evil word right now at the state level, so I don't see anybody joining the binding caucus right now, because at the end of the day, because the budget's going to be so important, you should not give your vote up early on and go along with what may come out that you can't agree with. So I don't see that happening at any level. And look, I've been dealing with binding caucus here at the local level when it comes to our local politics. Because I'm not the party pick. Binding caucus at the local level affects you. The people who typically would help you out, they can't fund you, they can't stand beside you. So I know what that's about, and I'm pretty much against that.
And how would you maybe rate the function of the legislature in the last couple of years? I mean, you hear some screaming about gridlock and partisanship and to the level that it's impeding progress being made on budgets. If you had a magic wand, is there some changes that you would make to the function of the legislature to maybe be able to make some progress on some of these big issues?
Having 40 members in the legislature, in the House, and the 20 in the Senate, that's what makes it difficult, because what's important for District 30 may not be important for one of the other districts that's out in the interior. And you can't be a no vote on everything. You're going to have to look at probably doing some compromises. So you may not get everything you want, just like they won't get everything they want. But you've got to move to that middle, to where hopefully everybody can come to a consensus to where we're going to do what's best for the state of Alaska. It might not be exactly what I want, but it needs to be close. So again, that's the relationships you have to build. And I like to think that I have that ability, because I'm a people person. I love to have conversations with people, and I want to hear their input. Maybe I'm not thinking of something exactly the way I should be, and I'm willing to listen. And I think a lot of times, partisan politics, we get in a position to where it's us against them, and we can't do that anymore. It has to change for the better of the state.
What do you think your biggest strength would be as a legislator?
My experience, my 35 years of experience. And some people basically have commented that, you know, all I've ever been is a government worker, and a government worker basically, I've never earned a paycheck, which is kind of demeaning considering my 12 years in the military and in my 22 years here responding as a first responder. Some people don't value that. I think that it should be highly valued, and there's a reason why I'm the chief of staff right now for this borough, because of my budgeting background and what I bring to the knowledge that I have dealing with the government situations. We want to do things responsible, and we want to do it in a way that hopefully can save taxpayers some funding as we go forward, and trying to make sure that we give the power to our leaders that we appoint in these positions to come to us with recommendations and listen to them. I've been in major emergencies, and I've dealt with those my entire life, and I think that this shouldn't be as difficult of what I've dealt with in my past.
And the flip side of that question, what do you feel like would be your greatest weakness then as a legislator?
Well, my greatest weakness, I guess, would be, that's always a good question. I would say that, it can't be a weakness, because I'm very compassionate about the people that I serve, and the people at District 30. I want to do the best for them. One of my weaknesses, I guess, was, again, to make sure that I'm listening to people. I need to listen to all sides before making an informed decision. That sometimes I'll shut out something because I've already formed my opinion, and we can't do that today. We got to listen to everybody.
Okay. So why should folks vote for you?
Vote for James Basin for State House because of my experience, my love for this community. I want to see the best for the state and for the Kenai-Soldotna area for District 30. I've been here for you for the last 22 years. I want to continue doing that for you for the next 2 years. You've trusted me as a fire chief, and I hope you can trust me as your representative.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like voters to know about you?
You can reach me on social media. All you have to do is do a search for James Basden, or just Basden. Basden for State House is our website. My phone number is 598-0911. Love to hear from you. Reach out, send me a text, and I'll get back to you if there's something I can do.
All right. Well, are there any other topics or areas that you would want to hit on before we...
Thanks for having us in. Great conversation.
Well, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
That That was James Baisden running for House District 30 against Ron Gillum of Soldotna, who did not respond to requests for interviews for this show. Early in-person voting is open. In Kenai, residents of Districts 29 through 32 can vote at Kenai City Hall through November 2nd. That's open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. In Soldotna, residents of Districts 29 through 32 can vote early through November 2nd at the Peninsula Center Mall from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Absentee by mail ballots can be dropped off behind the Borough Building in Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. This has been the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Thanks for tuning in.
Brothers here. If you are tired of political commercials and election angst, we have the perfect solution.
That's right, because on October 30th and the 31st, the weekend before the election,
or the apocalypse, depending on if you are a glass full or glass empty kind of person,
Triumvirate Theater will present their election show satire, Lame Ducks and Dark Horses.
That's right. All the fun starts here on KDLL at 7 p.m., and all you have to do is bring your sense of humor.
And as an extra bonus, Triumvirate Theater is running a Facebook Live event on Saturday, October 24th.
Also at 7 p.m.,
where we will be showing video clips from past shows.
It's all part of the fun of election season. Join us October 24th for the Facebook Live event for former great shows, and October 30th and 31st at 7 p.m. for this year's spectacular satire, Lame Ducks and Dark Horses, right here on KDLL. Until then, don't campaign like my brother!
Don't campaign like my brother!
Bye-bye!